Hey, guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome.
Yeah. So we were talking about training just before this. And if you want your training to be the top of the tier, not the top of the guys we're going to be talking to, but the top of the tier, you want to get with us and come and check us out because we are doing some new, fresh things. Our stuff is always fresh, latest trends, newest technologies in the field.
Yep, we're always partnering with different companies and corporations to come in and bring the absolute very best, freshest stuff, best instructors. It's a phenomenal ride.
So if you want to up your game, go to hazmatguys.com/hireus and reserve your spot and get to where we are now. Look at these handsome fellas over there. We have the illustrious Chiefs of New York State, along with Chris Gould, Dave Massaro from Schenectady, deputy chief over there, and the illustrious and benevolent. And if you've heard him before, he's been on multiple shows. Chief Dan Baker from New York State Hazmat Branch Chief. Thank you for coming on.
Happy to be here, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
So I was talking to Chief Baker a couple of weeks ago, if not a couple of months ago, I think it might have been, about a spate of something that, again, as a downstate, if you would say that, you know, a metropolitan area guy, I've never heard of portable pipelines. Can somebody just give me like the overview of what that means?
I'm happy to. Portable pipelines are a way of moving product from the source to the end user in a way that meets transportation needs. So either truck, trailer, liquefied, compressed, getting the most product to the end user in the easiest package to do it. And they're doing it because there is no pipeline and it's cheaper to truck from one spot to another.
So are we looking at like tube trailers? Are we looking at Connex boxes filled with cylinders? Like what exactly makes up one of these portable pipelines?
So they're going to be tube trailers of any different configuration based off of what's new in technology today. There could be five tubes. There could be 51 tubes. They could be horizontal. They could be vertical. It could be compressed. It could be liquefied.
See, I'm thinking like these things are like those welding tractor trailer type things where they got the, you know, like the 50-foot long tubes and they're all in like a kind of configuration. But I once we started talking about this, I looked up and it looks, some of them were even packaged inside like a regular tractor trailer skin. So you don't even know it's a tractor trailer carrying gas.
And what are you looking for on the outside?
That's one of the things that we found, Bob, is that local first responders sometimes have some confusion about the configuration and whether or not it's actually a hazmat. Some of the companies are using an intermodal container configuration to house the cylinders. Others, to your point, are using a soft-sided type of trailer that kind of keeps the cylinders out of the weather and keeps all the plumbing, you know, protected from weather and road salt and things of that nature. And so in those cases, you have to rely on the external markings on the container, which is, you know, your DOT placards and things like the DOT special permit number and the fact that they write natural gas compressed right on the side of the container. That's a pretty good clue.
I can attest from experience, just because it's written on the side of a container doesn't mean that you see it.
Wow. That's incredible. And we've had the reason why we had the conversation, because we had some incidents around New York State specifically that you guys wanted to kind of put up there and show us a little bit and talk about the response, right?
Absolutely. We fed five compressed natural gas trailers incidents that I know of. There might have been one extra one in the Albany County region. There was Fort Dickinson, the Central Bridge, Otsego County, and then two in Schenectady County that within a short couple weeks in December of this year.
So what's happened? What's been the issue with them? What do you guys see as the hazard? What are you hoping the first responders get from being here today?
The issue that's happened with them is tied to the challenge of just driving product across the state on a routine trip from point A to point B and B to A and redo it again. And so there's normal trucking incidents, like people are idiots and they get in accidents.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing too, before we get into the details, is what's unique about this industry is that you can literally find these tractor trailers anywhere. And, you know, the incidents that we're going to talk about kind of make it point to an upstate New York kind of problem. But you guys may or may not be aware that New York City had a plan years ago to be able to run tube trailers to the facility in Greenpoint for peak shaving and other kind of natural gas handling functions. So as the industry changes and as their customer base shifts around, there's virtually no part of our state and frankly, most northeastern states that is going to be insulated from the exposure to risk from having these things transported. They just literally can be anywhere.
So what are some of those exposures and risks?
The exposure would be we got fortunate in a couple spots. In this Schoharie County and Schenectady County, the first two incidents were in very remote locations. And so we affected five houses in total for two incidents. The Schenectady incident was in a residential neighborhood and right into a train bridge.
Oh, that's always fun. So, all right. So it went into the train.
I'm going to see some video on that one.
Okay. All right. So I'll wait to the questions for later. What have been some of the other runs that have been that first responders have been facing and challenges that they've been having to get across with these? Identification seems to kind of be one of them. People really aren't necessarily aware that they're arriving to, you know, these tube trailers, even though that you have compressed natural gas on there. What are some of the things that what are some of the hazards that are associated beyond just the flammable gas?
Well, I think the physical hazards, one thing that I'm sure Chris is going to talk about, you have cylinders under high pressure. And unlike the ASME style steel tube trailers, where if something unfortunate happens, the trailer tends to stay together pretty well. These are not like that. These are lightweight construction. They are trying to overcome the limitations of a highway, meaning they're only allowed 80,000 pounds, and they're trying to put as much gas on the trailer as possible. So they're using lightweight materials and lightweight cylinders, which leads to the sometimes unfortunate event of those cylinders leaving their home and seeking a home elsewhere. And Keith Farrell is certainly going to talk about that too, where cylinders under high pressure have rocketed out of the containers. And in both cases, both of the examples that Chief Massaro is going to talk about, that did happen. So you've got the hazmat, and then you've also got the risk of physical damage and injury from the containers moving around unexpectedly.
When I'm thinking of these cylinders, I'm thinking, again, the welding trucks I think of are like basically steel, 50-foot long cylinders, but to your point now, I'm thinking, okay, because we just did an episode, maybe two episodes ago, about compressed natural gas, liquefied natural gas, and one of the things is, like, they're built like SCBA cylinders, where they're like an aluminum, shell with the fiberglass wrapping around these things. So that would be probably a lighter weight option to put more gas in the trailer.
So there's different iterations of it, but they've moved to plastic, they've moved in carbon fiber, and they're dropping the weight of the tank to the best of their ability, and they're putting about 4,000 pounds worth of product into an entire package that's 80,000 pounds. So there's a lot of beef to the trailer, to the intermodal container, to the hauler.
So,
I would love some visuals, because
I'd love some visuals.
Visual guy.
I would love some visuals, because now I kind of imagined like a tube trailer, but now I'm feeling like my imagination was completely off base as far as what we're dealing with here.
All right. I'm waiting for the visual to pop up before I flip over the scene.
Go ahead and give me a second and I'll make sure you're on the right slide.
All right. I'm just waiting for it to pop. I'm watching the other screen to see when the PowerPoint comes up on the screen. Right now, it's just the galaxy right now. Well, while we're waiting on that, it's all right. Chief Massaro, you said that there was a couple of
yeah. Oh, good.
You said that there was a couple of incidents.
I thought for a moment he just like, you know, heart attack went stiff. Like there was nothing going on right there.
So you had two incidents in your city.
Well, so we had two incidents within the county.
Within the county.
So yeah, the city of Schenectady has the Schenectady County hazmat team. We're part of that.
Right.
So when local fire departments have incidents and they need hazmat, they'll call in the hazmat team.
Okay. And you're part of the county team.
What the deuce is going on? My monitors are shaking.
Yeah, I'm in the basement. This is like rocks. Like somebody's walking around on the first floor.
That's what I thought it was. Yep. I thought my wife was walking around.
I just get text messages from Capital District.
Yeah.
That's not what I meant, love.
We had a big earthquake. All right, well, let's get back into the show.
Wait, how do you spell it?
Now, Chief Massaro, you had a couple incidents in your county, correct?
Correct. Yeah, so Yeah, so the city of Schenectady is part of the county hazmat team. So we have 32 hazmat technicians amongst multiple other little specialist certifications. And we partner with some of the other agencies within the county of Schenectady to respond to hazmat incidents within the county.
Now, we have a photo up there of different iterations of this trailer, and wow, the top left one looks like a 338 cryogenic. I saw that on the streets,
certainly is, and that's what it is. But when we're talking about natural gas, we can't leave out LNG. We have to talk about compressed and liquefied.
So is that one then a liquefied natural gas truck up top?
That is correct.
Okay.
The bottom one right below that is a liquefied tank as well, but it has a regasification unit on it that they could use for any need almost instantaneously. As soon as it takes to get there, I'll use this. City of Rotterdam used it to supply their natural gas pipeline after their pipeline was destroyed by Irene. Right. So they brought in a unit similar to that. And they supplied their community.
The one up in the top right.
The other smaller ones.
Yeah, good. I'm listening.
So those other trailers are used by industry to connect the dots from the supply to their business. There's businesses up in rural Adirondacks where they're trucking 24 trailers, which is 48 loads back and forth a day to one facility.
Wow.
So essentially that's what incredible. They're doing is it's a drop and hook operation. If a paper mill needs natural gas, but they're not part of the distribution pipeline network, these companies will take the compressed gas tube trailers in loaded and drop a loaded trailer, pick up an empty trailer, and go back to whatever source pipeline they're using to load the trailers. So it's a kind of a round robin. They bring in a load, they take an empty trailer away. They don't wait for the gas to be unloaded. They drop it, they hook it up to the system that's in place to use the natural gas, and then they go back to the to whatever source they're loading the trailers at.
So the two at the bottom seem to have vertical tanks or horizontal tanks, and the one that says virtual pipeline CNG trailers seems to have vertical tanks. Are there varieties like that where you literally have a box truck and it's just filled with these vertical tanks stacked up?
Yes.
Okay.
And how many tanks depends on how many they can squeeze in.
Okay.
So 45, when we...
1, 12.
Wow. We as hazmat technicians know that you generally don't take the trailer out from the tractor. I'm sorry, the tractor away from the trailer when it's loaded. But these are not, you're saying that the guy drives away and leaves the thing there to offload. So obviously the trailer part of this thing is a little bit of different configuration where it is robust enough to hold the load and not have a tractor associated, right?
Yep. Part of the reason that they selected, in many cases, an intermodal platform to be able to, build their trailers is for that reason. Not only is the box robust enough to hold the weight of the containers, but the container chassis is able to hold up the entire weight of the product. The other thing, too, about these is that you're not shifting the center of the load where the trailer would become nose heavy. So dropping these things, it's important to drop them on a hard level surface so that they don't tip over, but they're really designed to sustain themselves in that type of drop and hook operation. The only difference between that the trailer that you see in the upper right hand corner of the screen, the intermodal container and the chassis are welded together. It's permanently affixed to the chassis. They're not meant to be removed from the chassis, but the chassis is stout enough to be able to support the weight of the load.
That's amazing.
So in all of these situations, I mean, obviously, except for the liquefied natural gas, are the tanks interconnected? Are they fed through like a cascade system, or do they just, are some of them like they just go from tank to tank to tank to tank?
So it's essentially a large cascade system.
A cascade.
One manifold on the back.
Pretty much universally throughout all of these?
It has one hose.
Okay.
However, those hoses get damaged during incidents. It's steel piping, stainless steel piping that
all right. So what are some of the things that you guys have seen, you know, as far as the damage, the situation, the hazards to the first responders, the difficulties that needed to be overcome?
So the most recent Schenectady County, and start with in Duanesburg. This was an incident that occurred at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Ooh.
So the responders are responding in a dark environment, and within, we'll call it first transmissions, they are able to correctly identify the trailer, probably because of previous experiences, even with an 80-foot drop. And I don't know if that photo does its justice, but that is a lot of work to get the driver out, and Dave can speak to that.
Yeah, so the initial call came in for a tractor trailer into a ditch, which you could clearly see Duanesburg considers their ditch as pretty big. Driver was trapped in the tractor, necessitating a low angle / high angle rope rescue at 3 a.m. in pretty treacherous conditions to haul him out. And then just a real quick damage assessment as best they could, given the time of day and the conditions.
That's incredible. And it looks kind of like it was on fire, but the bridge is unaffected?
No, so I don't believe that this ever caught fire. There were 3 or 5 that released. A couple, actually, if you want to zoom in, there you go.
Oh, that's part of the... Okay. So that took off.
When we talk about those ruptured cylinders... may rocket in high speed for long distances. This picture doesn't necessarily do it justice into comparison where it ricocheted off the mountain at treetop level. And I think moved about 400 feet total, right?
Wow. Huh. Okay. So we've got responders coming in. What have we seen any of these tanks? Have there been delayed ruptures? So, for example, a tank weaken and go halfway through an operation, or are they usually kind of doing their thing as soon as the incident happens?
So, hours after the initial incident, there were still tanks that had not released completely. They were still we'll put it out in a white cloud on occasion without a whole lot of reason behind it. We had shut off and isolated every tank by their valves, and there were still three tanks that were actively leaking beyond or behind their valves.
So the cylinder itself.
And it, but it was still pressurized at up to 3,500 PSI.
Well, all right. So you've got a container that is clearly been breached in some way, a high pressure container that we know is in a weakened condition. What's the options that you guys have? Because I don't know if I would necessarily feel comfortable putting a guy up against one of these, you know, low structural cylinders when I know I have a structural failure. So what, how did you guys handle that? What was the thought process?
Let me start, Dave, and then I'll kick it to you. So Mike, that's a very real consideration. And part of the explanation for how we arrived at the decision, I think, needs to come from us describing how the incident management system is structured at some of these incidents upstate in New York. You have a local fire department that responded to this incident as the initial responding agency. They then requested the county hazmat team, which brought county folks and the folks from the city of Schenectady as their hazmat component. And then additional resources were called after that. And that's how our state hazmat team was brought to the scene as well. When we started to make decisions about putting responders downrange, Chief Massaro and I both had pretty substantial concerns about just that, about the safety and effectiveness of putting folks down next to the trailer. And then later, as you'll see, when we decided to release gas to atmosphere, that's another thing that was pretty stressful for us, trying to make sure that the risk-benefit analysis was leaning as far as it possibly could towards the safety of the responders. Dave, what do you want to add to that? Because it in all cases, we're representing the state of New York, but we are working for the local fire chief, as is the city of Schenectady and the county hazmat team. Essentially, our folks from the state were answering to Chief Massaro. Chief Massaro was answering to the local incident commander. And collectively, we had to come up with a plan that not only we felt was appropriate, but that we could then sell to the local fire chief to say, hey, this is what we need to do. But there was quite a bit of debate about that, wasn't there, Chief?
Yeah, that was... I mean, that's health and safety, right? So we're trying to make sure that we can mitigate whatever incident we get called to. While inevitably incidents are not all like perfectly safe, but we want to send our crews in as, you know, as safely as we can. So
sure.
After kind of hemming and hawing and figuring out what course of action was the best, we ultimately just decided we're going to monitor those three cylinders and keep looking for pressure releases, you know, put some area rays and black line monitors around to monitor the situation. And then when we deemed it safe enough, we would send a crew down for a further evaluation.
So how did that risk versus reward balance go in the conversation? If you don't mind sharing some of the conversation, like, you know, the back and forth, because again, I could imagine it being a little bit stressful to be like, man, I got to take and put people next to this cylinder that could potentially fail, yet I have a job to do as well. So would anyone mind kind of walking through that thought process? How did you reach the conclusions that you did? What things did you see that said, okay, yeah, we're willing to take this risks for these benefits?
I'll start, and then, like I said, I'll pass it along to the chief. One of the things that we knew was that the pressure needed to be released from the cylinders before the container could be recovered. Now, there was a couple other factors, not the least of which was that we were on a major upstate thoroughfare, Interstate 88. The container was essentially under the bridge. The picture doesn't really show the extent to which the cylinders inside that container were actually under the highway overpass. So one of the concerns was, you know, with a lighter than air product, where's that stuff going to go? How is it going to impact the bridge if something really unfortunate happens? But we knew at the ground level, the only way to recover that container and those cylinders was to get them emptied out. Obviously, that presented problems not only from the standpoint of how are we going to monitor the gas under the bridge, but also how do we get responders close enough to the container to vent the gas to atmosphere. With the plumbing on the trailer heavily damaged, understand that when these things are in normal operation, they're upright, they're on their wheels, all of the contents of those cylinders manifolded together can be accessed from one central point on the back of the trailer. That's not the situation that presented itself in Waynesburg because, it, as you can imagine, the container and the plumbing were heavily damaged. One of the things that was a big advantage to us for this response from the state perspective was that we asked in conjunction with Chief Massaro if we could bring a technical rescue component out to the scene as well. So the way the tiered response worked was you had the local fire department, local EMS, then you had the county resources, which included a large contingent from the Schenectady Fire Department for hazmat, right, Chief? And then the state hazmat team was called out, and we brought some of our equipment. But in addition to hazmat equipment, we asked for one of our light technical rescue vehicles to come out with some tech rescue specialists. And they did two things for us, which, Mike, I'm getting to the point, so don't worry.
I got you.
Works into the safety of the scene. Two things they did for us. They put some rigging up to allow safe entry and egress to the scene because the guys were climbing over rocks. It was a very, very steep embankment. And so they put some rigging in place, basically a handrail, to get us from A to B a little bit more safely and to give the guys something to hang on to. The other thing they did for us, which was really very helpful, was we put a remote air monitoring device up underneath the bridge. They were able to put some rigging under the bridge and right below the trailer, under the bridge girders, we had a remote monitor. Was that an area ray or a black line? I think it was an area ray.
It was just a multi-ray.
Multi-ray. Yeah. Okay. So we at least had the ability to make sure that we weren't capturing gas. The big concern the chief and I had was that, you know, as we start to release this gas, where is it going to go? Well, if it collects under the bridge, that's a problem. We want to get rid of it. And we certainly don't want to create any other further damage to infrastructure. In the unfortunate, and as it turned out, the way we managed the ignition source is an unlikely event of an ignition. We didn't want to damage in the bridge. And so that tech rescue component and their ability to help us place those things, I think that helped quite a bit.
Oh, for sure.
Got it. And we're going
to
take
to figure out, well, if we got a vent to atmosphere and it was going to be the Schenectady folks that were kind of on the hook for that. Although what in practice we do is that we have Schenectady responders shoulder to shoulder with state level responders. That created some stress for the chief and I about putting folks downrange, and you want to talk about that a little bit?
We're gonna break the episode here because there's more to talk about, and we'll come back, and I'm curious about a couple more things on this instance. So stick with us, guys.